It's time for Lickin' On Lending.
Welcome, everybody. Good to have you with us.
Welcome to Lickin' On Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news, all related to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Transformational Mortgage Solutions. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now here's your host of Lickin' On Lending, David Lickin.
Let's begin.
Welcome. It's Monday, September 23rd, 2019. Oh, yeah, I had a few cups of coffee getting ready. But I was excited about today's podcast, as I am each and every week, because I listen to so many podcasts. And I realize what an honor it is, and I realize how much I enjoy listening to other podcasts, and I enjoy the feedback we're getting from having you, our listeners, listening to the podcast. So really appreciate you being here. I could give so many shout-outs right now, so many people that contacted us, but I want to just say this podcast is created by mortgage professionals. It is for mortgage professionals, and we're grateful to have you as our listener. Again, our commitment is to bring you timely information in an audio format that you can listen to anytime and anywhere. In the hot topic this week, I caught up with a guy by the name of Scott Rose, who's Chief Innovation Officer for Class Valuations. And we talked about some current challenges going on in the valuation space and the type of appraisal technology that is possible today and the value that it brings lenders. So really interesting. You're going to enjoy this conversation I had with Scott. The best part is after we shut off the recorder, he and I talked, I think, another hour about a lot of other things. What an interesting guy. Really enjoyed meeting, getting to know Scott Rose of Class Valuation. You're going to enjoy the interview. It is pre-recorded and it'll be in the hot topic segment a little bit later on. I want to say a big thank you to the Industry Syndicate. We're honored to be one of the original members of the Industry Syndicate. It's a growing number of podcasts within the industry, mostly focused on the origination side. We're the original ones that are focusing on the operational side of the business and the C-level executives and the managers throughout the industry. But it's also really interesting, when you look at our listener mix, we really attract the up-and-comers in the industry. Think about it. How many people are going to listen to an hour podcast about operations and the regulatory stuff, the profit doctor, technology? Of course, everyone's kind of interested in technology because we all want to see what's happening. It's new real. But it's really interesting what's going on and who we attract. So several people said, Dave, we pay attention and we interview when they say they're a regular listener to the Lickin' On Lending podcast. Would they ask a question in the interview? They say they're listeners on Lickin' On Lending. He says, Lickin', that gets them some real kudos. So anyway, hey, quick update from Mitch Cohen, Director of Public Relations and Marketing and Communications at Black Knight. In a nutshell, we saw August's numbers continue to improve. Just 36,200 for the month. Foreclosures hit an 18-year low, down by more than 23% from this time last year. So that's good news for the foreclosures. Of course, Black Knight, with their MSP system, has all the data. They have tons of data. We'll talk about that later on. But they're also, the number of loans that are active in foreclosure continue to improve as well at 253,000. Prepayment speeds have increased by 5%. That's no surprise from July and has reached a three-year high. In fact, August's prepayment rate is up 62% from this time last year. So lots of good information. Check out all the results on the BlackKnightInc.com website. Appreciate them for their sponsorship of the podcast. Also sponsors are the Mortgage Bankers Association of America, the Community Lenders of America. These two trade associations protect consumers. So these two associations are so effective in helping make sure that they're not putting regulation out there that's going to end up hurting the consumer. Art talked about Black Knight. Very grateful to them. Go check out BlackKnightInc.com. Open Mortgage, a leading buyer of reverse mortgages, and also the home of some of the top LOs in the country. Finastra, who's the mortgage bot solution, automatically addresses compliance issues and delivers enhanced borrower satisfaction and increased productivity. I love their mobile app, their point-of-sale mobile app. Very, very effective. Also, Resex Warehouse Lending, a division of United Bank. Check out Ken Jones's interview that we did last week on the September 16th, 2019, on the three pillars of successful leadership per Ken Jones. It's really good. Got some good feedback on that. Also, Lenders One of the Mortgage Collaborative, these two mortgage co-ops create competitive advantages for both lenders and vendor members. Both will be having open houses coming up just a little over a month from now at the National MBA Conference here in Austin for the annual MBA Conference, as well as Velma, an efficient marketing email marketing platform, getting the word out about our podcast and about your business, as well as KnowledgeCube, providing easy, fun training. You know what an LMS stands for? Allison taught me this. LMS stands for Learning Management System. That's what they are. Great tool and technology. Also, they put up some free content. Encourage you to check it out at knowledgecoop.com. And then Vidyard, a powerful video communications technology enabling you to powerfully connect with your customers. And last but not least, AI Assist, powered by Conversica. If you're looking for an AI solution, so many of our clients are, it's a new thing. It's a tool that sits AI Assist, as we talked about on the podcast some time back, where Roman talks about how they sit between you, the customer, and implement a really high-end system, and that was Conversica. So, yeah, that's right. Thanks, Paul, for letting me know. It's July 16th. It's amazing. I sit here and mention it, and all of a sudden on my screen, Paul starts writing out, yes, Roman Benfield. July 16th. Go check out that podcast. Also, special thank you to Alice, Andy, Alan, and Joe for their contributions each and every week to this podcast. The MBA's got their conference coming up. I got the word from Rob Van Raphorst. I'll be there at it. A lot of folks are going to be. This could be a well-attended conference, and so I encourage you to check it out. Also become a part of MAA, Mortgage Action Alliance. Without further ado, let's get over and get this week's MBA Mortgage Minute from Rob Van Raphorst.
Hi, I'm Rob Van Raphorst. Welcome to the Mortgage Minute and the latest news from the Mortgage Bankers Association. Last week, MBA submitted recommendations to the CFPB regarding the GSE patch. This was in response to the Bureau's advance notice of proposed rulemaking that begins the process of determining how best to replace the GSE patch and reform the qualified mortgage standard. It is currently set to expire in January of 2021. MBA's letter emphasized that an expiration of the patch without a defined plan to continue to serve these borrowers will have dramatic negative consequences for the housing market, resulting in more expensive or unavailable credit. Also last week, MBA submitted comments to Ginnie Mae in response to a request for input on a new stress testing framework designed to assess the financial performance of non-depository issuers across varying economic scenarios. MBA's recommendations caution against over-reliance on the stress test results. We urge Ginnie Mae to focus on stress testing as one tool among many in which results serve as the basis for further analysis rather than immediate actions limiting issuer participation in the program. That's it for this week. Thanks for joining.
Yeah, some interesting stuff going on with the Ginnie Mae. And I don't know if you saw a news article that came out. It was published by Bloomberg that our good friend, Joe Murin, is being recruited back by the White House. We'll see if he shows up as the president of Ginnie Mae and what's going on there. But that's interesting that that article got leaked, or I think is the characterization of it. So what's going on at Ginnie Mae? We've got good friends there. I'm going to got to call in to Michael Drain right now to get caught up with him. I'm sure he can't talk about anything official, but at least get caught up in seeing what the latest is with Ginnie Mae. Hope need to get him back on the podcast. Michael, if you're listening to this, get ready. We want to have you back. It's a good podcast we had you on some time ago. Anyway, thank you to Rob Van Raphorst for this week's Mortgage Minute. Oh, yeah, and be sure to sign up for Mortgage Action Alliance, folks. MAA, Mortgage Action Alliance, can't stress that enough. You got to have your voice heard, and you do not need to be a member of the MBA. Les Parker's here with this week's TM Spotlight and this week's Macro View of the Markets. Les?
TM Spotlight Soundbites is brought to you by Amesworth Advisors. In the White Room, with black curtains, meet the bankers. Black Hole Country, no rate payment, tired savings. Malden Economics publishes my favorite newsletter. It recently validated my long-held position that the financial world is dancing on the ledge of black holes. On the edge of black holes lies the event horizon, where conventional methods of finance and investing no longer hold. Negative interest rates, inverted yield curves, low velocity of money, mucho dinero, all of them sleep in this place with the desperate crowd, lie in the dark where the shadows run from themselves. These views are my own. Go to tmspotlight.com to subscribe to my daily newsletter.
Ah, that brings up some memories from college days. little psychedelic music. Makes me want to go get my old tie-dye T-shirt. Alice, put that thing on. Remember those days a long time ago? So anyway,
oh, yeah.
Good job. Kind of brought up. That was really well done. That was really well produced. Les, thank you so much. TMSpotlight.com. Check out and subscribe. Les's daily newsletter. It's free. Anyway, Les Parker, check it out. Appreciate it. TMSpotlight.com. Joe Farr could not be here with us. We shed a tear over that. Only that he'll be back. Don't worry. But he did connect with our producer and program director and scheduler and everything else par excellence. They recorded an update on this week's weekly market. So let's hear what Joe Farr has to say.
Hey, Dave. Monday morning, about 10 o'clock Central Time. I'm recording this. I have to be somewhere around noon. So I did want to give you a quick update. MBS prices are up a little bit this morning. Weak German manufacturing data has led to a decline in bond yields and a decline in the stock market. Not a big one. Interesting to note that the MBS prices are up, but not near as much as 10-year Treasury prices. So if you're watching the 10-year Treasury, you need to be aware that things aren't quite as good in the MBS market or in the mortgage market as they appear in the Treasury market. Now, Dave, looking at last week, it was really a pretty good week for MBS prices and mortgage rates. MBS prices improved about 75 basis points, which reversed a little more than half of the drop in MBS prices that occurred the prior week. There were three really major market-moving events last week. On Monday, as we talked on the show last week, the market reacted to the weekend attacks on the Saudi oil fields. Now, that had a positive effect on MBS prices. Wednesday's Fed meeting was the next one. It caused a lot of volatility, but really by the end of the day, not much net change in prices. The statement didn't cause much of a reaction because it included pretty much what everyone thought. It announced a quarter point rate cut. It also showed the Fed assessed the economy at about the same as it had at the last meeting. Now, following the statement, Fed Chairman Powell conducted a press conference, and the market was able to see the Fed member forecast. This created some volatility. Both showed a less dovish Fed than had been expected, with fewer rate cuts in the future. MBS prices gave back their earlier gains at this time. Stocks fell pretty hard right after the press conference and the forecasts were released, but by the day, it pretty much recovered all that drop. Friday was the other day, and it had to do with the trade talks with China, and really was a misunderstanding. The market reacted negatively, market anyway, to an announcement that the Chinese trade delegation had canceled some plans to go to Montana to visit soybean farmers and pork producers. This was viewed as a negative for the overall trade talks, when in reality it was just that they chose not to take that trip and wanted to get back to China sooner than they had previously planned. So later in the day on Friday and over the weekend, that really became a little more clear. Last week, we did have some good housing data. Home builder sentiment rose more than expected. Both the single-family housing starts and permits showed significant growth in August. And then existing home sales in August were the best they've been any time so far in 19. So good housing market there. Looking at this week, Dave, we have really only one real major economic data point to watch for that comes out on Friday. It's the core PCE. PCE's personal consumption expenditure. This will be for August. It's released at 8:30. Now, this is the Fed's preferred inflation indicator, and if it shows inflation rising any faster than what the market expects, it could be a big negative in that the Fed is so sensitive right now to things like the actual state of inflation, and it could weigh on their decisions about future rate changes. We have more housing data to come out next week, new home sales on Wednesday, and pending home sales on Thursday. Actually, that should be this week. The third estimate of second quarter GDP comes out on Thursday. Consumer confidence and consumer sentiment will come out this week. Confidence on Tuesday and sentiment on Friday. That can be a big event, certainly not to the extent of core PCE, but it's an important piece of information. There are many Fed members making speeches during the week, which could impact the market. And then, as has been the case in the past, new information regarding things like trade talks with China or Iran's involvement in the bombing of the Saudi oil fields. I mean, who knows where the data could come from, the information could come from, but there's a lot of things moving the market these days, so it's good to pay attention. Thanks, Dave. That's my comments for the week.
Good job, Joe. You know, he is so conversational. Even when I was listening to him recording, it sounded like we were just like like Joe's here like normal. So you hear me in the background. Oh, yeah, okay. And then I go, oh, that's right. He's recorded. I can't ask him any more questions or elaborate on that. So missed you, Joe, but good job of the recording. Good job, Paul, in getting that done on such short notice. Really appreciate that. Let's get over to Scott Gordon of Open Mortgage talking about the science of sales.
Scott Gordon here with a bit of science. Are you likable? If you're like me, you're thinking, yes, of course I am. And if I'm not, what does it matter as long as I do a good job? Failing to understand the importance of likability is a mistake many professionals make. Studies show that being likable is far more important than competence, both in the office and outside of it. We like people that are similar to us. We like people that compliment us, and we like people that cooperate with us. When creating new relationships, engage in meaningful small talk and mine for personal information. Ask potential customers about their families in ways that relate to their purchase or mortgage needs. When meeting a realtor, do a quick Google search. Plan some questions you can ask casually. Find one or two specific traits or details to compliment. But remember, compliments must be TSP, true, specific, and positive. To get customers or realtors to open up for small talk, appear to be similar to them. Try mirroring. If you hear a phrase or see a mannerism, try adopting it during the course of your conversation. This will help build rapport and allow for a relaxed conversation. Sound too good to be true? It's not. It's just the science of sales.
That is good stuff. Science of sales. You know, I have more people calling me and saying, I really like that science of sales thing. It's giving me some real good tips and ideas. So, Scott, thanks for taking the time to do it. And if you're looking for a good mortgage company to go to work for, check out Open Mortgage. And if you're looking to get into the reverse mortgage business and looking for an investor, Scott Gordon can work with you there, too. So, Open Mortgage. Check it out, openmortgage.com. Alice Alvey is here with us. Last week we said, and here's Alice, CMB, Vice President of Education and Training at Union Home Mortgage with this week's legislative update. Got to read that all the way through. I like that. And here's Alice.
Good to have you. Johnny. That was a fun show.
Here's Johnny. It's good to have you with us. And I'm so excited you're going to be here in Austin, Texas for the annual conference. That'll be so good.
Yeah, I am excited. And, of course, Union Home is a big sponsor of the Empower event that's being held Saturday, and I hear you're going to be broadcasting there, too.
Yes, and you're going to be joining me at the mic. We get to record a lot of good interviews with some top women leaders in the marketplace. So really excited to have you join me.
Yeah, it's a great event. I really encourage every business leader out there, you know, since we're doing our segments on leadership here, a big part of that is making sure that you have good women leaders and you give the women the opportunity to grow just as much in that path. And this is really a great event. You just have to reassure everyone. It is all about just managing leadership in the workplace. It's not necessarily women specific, even though it happens to be an audience of women. I think the guys are welcome. It's not that they're excluded.
Yeah. In fact, I was just talking to Marcia, and we got to tell everybody we have Marcia Davis coming on October 7th to discuss the upcoming Empower event. And so just have a check with Marcia, make sure us guys are there. I know I get to sit outside with the booth. So if you're wanting to come meet some women leaders, come sit with me at the booth. Alice will be there on the mic with me part of the time. So they're excited. That's a great, great shout out. So I am thrilled that Bill and the group and company there do such a great job supporting of Empower.
Yeah.
Such a powerful, powerful event. And last year, remember that when we were in Washington, D.C.? You brought over this whole group. It was so much fun. They were so nervous. We were switching microphones around, putting on headphones. That was so much fun. Looking forward to that.
Yes. They're a great group. Yes, Bill sends a good 10 of us out there. And then he's also hosting a women's leadership event here at the company level. So there will be 600 women getting together, Union Home women.
Wow.
And we have great speakers. Marcia Davies will be there. We're branding it with MBA. So, again, encourage all the leaders out there at mortgage companies to leverage MBA and their Empower event to be able to kickstart something at your organization, too. So I'm going to get on with the legislative update.
Yes, yes.
It was interesting that, well, I love the white room with black curtains that lasted. That was really deep. Yeah.
That was
good. I had to go back and listen to that one a few times. He hit the nail on the head with that one. The GSE patch that Rob Van Rapport talked about in the MBA section, you know, if you look at our time frame right now, we are, 15 months or so, 16 months away from having to have something new where the GSE patch goes away. And when you look back at any other major piece of legislation that converts the industry, like take Dodd-Frank, for example, That was about 23 months from the time that there was actually a proposed rule, something for people to chew on, and then actual date for implementation. So we are way behind schedule on something this major to have happen by January of 2021. So we'll see what happens, but I'm betting on extension.
Yep, I would bet. That's a good bet. You're safe with that one.
Yeah, I'm not a betting person, but I'm betting on that. Anyway, a couple of quick things. HUD's implementation of the FHA Disparate Impact Standard is still open for comment. You need to get your comments in by October 18th. This one has gone through round one already with a notice of proposed rulemaking. So this one actually now is our final round of being able to comment on how disparate impacts should be handled in mortgage banking. This is a big deal because as lenders out there for many, many years, the disparate impact rule has always been one of prove yourself innocent. You are guilty by virtue of data that you may not have and had any control of. You know, fair lending is a lot of looking in the rearview mirror at your data. Now, there are some software companies out there that offer the ability to get you a more real-time forward-thinking look at it, but most of us are looking at those numbers in the rearview mirror, and at that point, it's too late. It's already the data is out there that there is a particular type of loan program or regional activity that's having some kind of a disparate impact. What this rules and these set of standards do is put a burden of proof on the challenging party. So the charging party or plaintiff would now have a burden of proof that their practice, or that if they believe that a lender's practice is causing a disparate impact on a prohibited basis, that they would have to actually have some proof, not just commentary or hypothetical scenarios. They have to be able to say that there's cause, that it would be predictably producing a discriminatory effect. Then it moves to the respondent to be able to say that then they have more facts to be able to challenge the angle, for example, that party took in challenging their practices. So it gives us a bit of a process. Now, step three still allows that charging party could have a challenge with whatever lending practice was going on. But for lenders who are concerned about data that just happens to come about, and I'm sure Andy can talk about this, where it's random data pulled that may indicate something that's not acceptable, it gives lenders a chance to be able to defend with a business process that made sense. So check that out. The comments are due by the 18th. And then last but not least, on September 10th, the CFPB issued three new policies. They believe these will open up some additional products in the market. To me, it looks like maybe some private investors might use this and some larger lenders. But essentially, they've now opened up a framework to have compliance assistance from them where you could send in product information and CFPB would comment on whether or not the product is a fair and could be going through like a two-year trial period, whereas a lender, you wouldn't have to worry about getting written up for any possible TIL violations or RESPA violations. So it's an interesting set of three pieces of legislation that essentially work together in hopes of opening up the market for lenders to have more pilot programs. Pilot programs have essentially gone away because no one wants to, you know, as Mitch Keiter has said many times, you don't want to find out you were wrong just through court of law. So I'd love to get Mitch on the show and talk a little bit about both these subjects. And he can tell us if people are interested in the legal side of it. I'm sure he can help. But these are real interesting for lenders interested in, I would say, like a non-QM pilot. Check these out, and they may give you an avenue to introduce a new product.
And we're starting to see some new products come out. That's very good, Alice. Good suggestion. Excellent. And both to have Mitch back on and to talk about this. Your update, someone's just texted me, says, wow, I just so grateful, Dave, that you put up Alice's segment up on the website. He says, I'm referring that link out to so many people to go listen back to all that stuff. He now has it to the point where he requires his compliance people and a number of other people within the company, ops people, they have to record it. He runs tests on your content here on the Levy Bite. Isn't that hilarious? It's good stuff. Right. It's that good. It's really, really good. And one person said, that Alice Alvey, she's golden. So is everyone else. Aww. But They really value the stuff. So you're loved, Alice. You got a following out there. We're glad to have you been here since the beginning. Appreciate it so much. And looking forward to recording the interview with Bill this Friday. It's going to be this Wednesday. And we're going to be playing that later on in the podcast and in a couple of weeks out. So anyway, appreciate so much. I just want to say, everyone, a shout out to Alice. It's appropriate with Alice's segment to talk about Knowledge Coop. They do a great job with fun and easy training technology.
Hi, Nathan here from the Knowledge Coop. How are you at storytelling? You may have seen the J.J. Abrams TED Talk about this mystery box that he got. He tells the story of his grandfather giving him a gift, but he decided, for some reason, to never open it. To this day, it remains a mystery to him as to what's inside that box. When you are teaching your courses, how can you incorporate great storytelling and a mystery box into the lesson? See, that's what we strive to do here at the Knowledge Coop. So check out KnowledgeCoop.com for fun and easy training for the mortgage professionals, all video-based and all powered by a smart digital platform.
Check out KnowledgeCoop.com. Nathan Nottingham does a great job of giving you updates. Alan Pollack is at the Digital Mortgage Conference in Las Vegas. He's in the middle of a demonstration and talking to some people, so he texted Paul and said, hey, just have Licken say this on the podcast. He's going to give us a full report next week. But as a teaser, he says what he's hearing a lot of is remove the human time suck. In other words, all the things where humans are sucking time out of the process, where we can be automating more of that, using more technology. That's one of the themes he's hearing. He says, and I love this one, liberation of the human talent. Why do we have people and mortgage loan originators getting in and having to do a lot of detail work? That is just sometimes insane. Surround them with technology, surround them with people, get the salespeople out there selling, operating your greatest. So liberate your human talent to operate in their highest performance. And finally, personalization wins clients. That is so true. Personalization wins clients. So that's a couple of sound bites. Alan will be here next week giving us an update on what he heard. And we've got several other people in there running around. We'll be giving us some updates from the conference. Good conference. I hear it's well attended and expensive conference to attend if you're a vendor. But a lot of good content there. So thank you, Alan. Appreciate the text and wish you the best out there. When you talk about technology, you got to talk about Finastra. And we're so pleased with our advertising relationship with them. Next Monday, I'll be leaving right after the podcast to go up to Chicago to attend one of their upcoming events. They're one of the leaders. Now that they've been acquired and they're combined with MySys out of Europe, third largest fintech company, but it comes down to results. And you have to go listen to the interview we did with Eric Schwab when we were at the Independent Community Bankers Association conference earlier this year. It taught how the power of the Finastra apps and technology is working to make a difference in their originations. Appreciate them as an advertiser. Check it out, finastra.com, finastra.com. Andy Schell, good to have you here with us. And I wish I could run a drum roll in the background. I'm learning how to add some sound effects in with some technology, but you now are officially Dr. Andy Schell. So the Profit Doctor was a handle we gave you, but now it's official. You really are the Profit Doctor.
Thank you very much, Dave. And actually, I actually have a trademark title, Dr. Schell, the Profit Doctor.
I love it. Dr. Schell, the Profit Doctor.
That's the Profit Doctor's been around probably since 2004 or so. I put it with one of my consulting companies, and then you liked it and started calling me it, and it's just stuck. So
thank
you very much.
That's so fun to see how something like that sticks. You know, it goes to you put something around your identity like that, and it really sticks. It can make such a difference. So what you got for us this week, Andy?
Well, Dave, I'm going to talk about hedging and how hedging is impacting mortgage companies and some of the risks that mortgage companies embrace because of hedging activity that is sometimes unknown. We all know that the interest rate lock commitment and loan held for sale is subject to market risk because otherwise rates wouldn't change all day long. So we know that there's exposure there, but how does that all fit together? So this week at the MBA webinar on Wednesday, I'm going to be talking about hedging. And it's really, really designed to teach non-secondary marketing people about hedging. So I talk about words like, negative convexity, empirical duration, or duration modifiers, beta weighting, implied volatility. All these words are words that secondary marketing people throw at people to make them not ask any more questions. And so what I do in the webinar is I actually explain what all those words mean and how it all fits together. How the best efforts works, obviously, is very simple. But then the next step of having a TBA MBS short position as our value preservation tool until the loan's closed, then we enter into a short-term mandatory delivery commitment, all while we're covering our shorts by implementing pair-off transactions of our open short position. So what I just said should be immediately perfectly clear to any CEO or any CFO in mortgage lending, because it gets worse than that. It's like, for example, what happens when rates rise quickly and there is a hedge slippage as the short coverage reacts less quickly than the long value decline? So that's a little bit more complicated question, so let's break it down just a bit here. So when rates rise, the value of the loans in the IRLC fall. When rates rise, the value of the hedge and the MSR rises along with pull-through improves. So if the long position falls in value faster than the rise in value of the short position, then we've got a hedge mismatch. We've got our hedge wasn't perfect in a moment of high rate change volatility, and that can result in a loss. So the way that we fix that is by having the right hedge strategy can reduce the negative effect of rapid rise in rates and the volatility effect it can have on the long position. Because part of the challenge is that on the mandatory delivery desk, we're dealing with people, the desk, yeah. The Wells Fargo trading desk issues mandatory delivery commitments. And when there's a significant amount of volatility, they're likely to be more cautious in offering their bid position. At the same time, the TBA short position is going to react more quickly. And what's interesting, too, is when rates come back down, the values go back up, the rate that it changes is much slower. Values rise slower than they fall. So you got to take that into account as well. So anyway, I talk about this stuff. I explain why that happens, the math behind it, the finance behind it, and the people behind it. And this is something that I think is important for any CEO and CFO to know so that they can ask the right questions to make certain that the company is properly protected. And all that's on Wednesday. So MBA.org education, sign up, pay attention, attend the class, learn something that maybe you didn't know or maybe you already knew, but it's my experience that the pool of people who know what I just said well is fairly small. So learn it. There's no reason why you can't learn it. I break it down into pieces so anybody can understand it.
And there's nobody better to teach it than the professor of mortgages, Dr. Schell. So true. And then you've got an open house coming up here at the conference. We want to tell and make our listeners aware of that.
Yes, we're looking forward to our client reception we're holding at the MBA, and so watch for emails about that.
Good, good, good. We're looking forward to that, and we'll hear more about where, when, all that kind of good stuff in future podcasts. Thank you, Andy, so much. And again, congratulations officially to Dr. Andy Schell, the profit doctor.
Thank you, Dave.
Well, that's
appreciate it very
good.
Much.
Yeah, it was good having you. We actually had dinner on Friday night celebrating that with him. It's an early dinner, but it's really fun to get together with Andy. So anyway, check him out. Get a hold of him, Andy, at mbs-team.com. Check out the website, mbs-team.com.
You got it.
Folks,
thanks, Dave.
You bet. Thank you, Andy. That ends our weekly update. And if you're listening on a downloaded basis, that ends this segment or this podcast. But then stay tuned because we immediately roll into our Hot Topic segment. So on today's Hot Topic, I am excited to have Scott Rose, who's Chief Innovation Officer at Class Valuations. Scott has over 18 years of valuation industry experience. And prior to joining Class, he was the Vice President of Valuation Connect and served two terms as the former Vice Chair of the Colorado Board of Real Estate Advisors. Today, you're going to hear him talk about the current challenges in the valuation space. We're going to talk also about some types of appraisal technology that is possible today. Very interesting, as well as the value this brings to lenders. We're looking forward to sharing this interview that we just recorded. So, all right, let's get this started. Folks, I'm excited to have Scott Rose, Chief Innovation Officer with Class Valuations, joining me on the call. Scott, thank you for joining me today.
Thanks for having me, David. Appreciate it.
I want our audience to get to know you a little bit, Scott. So tell us, did you get in the mortgage industry or in the appraisal side of the business by accident or intentionally?
Well, it's kind of both, I suppose. You know, as a lot of real estate appraisers end up in the profession, whether it's family or friends. One of my great friends growing up had an older brother who was an appraiser, and so I found myself working in the appraisal offices in the summer times.
Oh, good.
Would run back and forth to the one-hour photo store and print out paper copies of appraisals and glue the photos in and deliver them to clients.
Oh,
and just kind of the office gopher, and that's how I started.
So how did you end up getting connected with the folks at Class Valuation?
As you know, Mike Detweiler, our CEO, and I have had a long relationship, both personally as well as colleagues in the industry, and always had a lot of respect for one another and you know, had hoped to work together one day. And I left Valuation Connect. I was the president there. It was originally Urban Lending Solutions Appraisals. We grew that business and sold it to Mortgage Connect in 2017. And I left at the beginning of 2018. And right as I was leaving is when Mike and Adam Doktoroff, who is a partner in Narrow Gauge Capital, the firm that acquired Class last March, approached me about this opportunity. And so it's just kind of timing, just worked out perfectly, and was able to join in and join Class in April of 2018.
Well, as most of you know, Class Valuations, one of the top AMCs, the top three to be exact, and you were just acquired, as you mentioned. Give us a little more background on Class Valuations.
Absolutely. So Class Valuation really grew up in the wholesale space. We are by far the largest AMC that operates within the wholesale lending aspect of our market. And as mentioned, in 2018, it was acquired by Narrow Gauge Capital. And really, you know, the opportunity that Narrow Gauge and others saw in the organization was had a phenomenal customer service and operating model, very efficient operating platform, and was fairly sectored in the wholesale space doing traditional appraisal work. And knowing that the industry was about to embark on all these changes, saw a great opportunity to kind of leverage that operating platform and start to grow and expand the business into other verticals, as well as really invest in technology to really help drive the direction of where the industry is going for the future.
Well, you guys have done a great job, and you now have a lot of capital behind you, so we're expecting some great things, and I'm really excited to talk about appraisals. It really kind of hit my radar again when Housing Wire published an article on August 23rd entitled, "Appraisals May Soon Not Be Required on Certain Home Sales of $400,000 and Under." That got my attention. Then you read down later, it says this is not applicable to Fannie Mae loans, Freddie Mac loans, or HUD loans or VA loans. I'm going, well, okay, who is this applicable for? And I guess it's for some portfolio product, but talk about that article. I'm sure you read it and have some thoughts on it.
Absolutely. Yeah, you know, the recent raise in the de minimis level definitely caused a lot of media attention. And you know, I know a lot of appraiser organizations were really lobbying to keep that down to try to continue to require a licensed appraiser to be involved in these valuations. You know, as you mentioned, it's probably not going to have a huge impact today with Fannie and Freddie and HUD, where the majority of the mortgage loans are originated through. It may have a bit more of an impact on home equity lending or other portfolio lending. You know, a lot of that has been in the jumbo space, which probably exceeds that de minimis level anyways, at least in the portfolio side outside of home equity lending. So really, home equity will probably have the biggest impact for today. It's hard to say with privatization and other things taking place what that might hold for the future, if it has a broader impact industry-wide at that point. But right now, I think it will really be, you know, segregated to the home equity lending market. Yeah.
Yeah. And I agree with that. I just gave some feedback to the editors at HousingWire because they're doing a follow-up article on this. And I really said, I don't think this is going to have a big impact, at least not immediately, as long as we're in a Fannie Freddie world. But we're seeing more private securities coming in that could change all that. So we may not be as heavily reliant on Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac and HUD and VA in the future. So that could bring some changes. But that's more of a change. I want to talk about what's challenging the valuation space today. What would you say are the biggest challenges?
Well, I think it depends on the stakeholder's perspective. From users of appraisal services, I think the challenges are really around cost and capacity and timelines, right? The mortgage market is moving into a much more digital world with instant gratification, yep. Right? You can get bank statements pulled electronically. Credit reports are instantaneous. A lot of the credit side has advanced to really streamline and decrease cycle time. And so appraisals are continuing to be a long pole in the tent, and I think that pole is getting longer as the other aspects of the mortgage industry, right? So I think that's a big challenge for the appraisal industry today. And then with all this change is hard. And if you think about it from our perspective, it really boils down to adoption and building adoption within the profession, so that the profession can move along with the change without creating too much of an impact there.
Well, also the fact that we have a lot of appraisers aging out, getting old and retiring, going away, is that something that you would consider a challenge today?
It gets talked about a lot, and I do. I think that adds to both challenges, right? Because we do have a more limited populace of appraisers. And so when we go through refi booms and when transaction volume goes up, we continue to see these strains, especially in certain areas of the market of the country, right? Everyone knows Washington State, Oregon, Colorado was in there for a long time. There's areas where turn times all of a sudden are extending to 3 and 4 weeks, and costs are going up extensively, and that's painful for the industry. And I do think that's a contributor. And then as well as change, right? Studies show that the older and older we get, the harder and harder it is to accept change and move with change. So that adds to the adoption problem too. I do think that some of the technologies that are coming into play though in the current market could help with that. And we do have an aging populace that maybe aren't quite ready for retirement. And they'd like to extend their working years, but they don't want to be out in the field inspecting properties in the winter in Detroit or in Colorado. And, it's getting harder to walk around the outside of homes and things of that stuff. And so if we can keep them busy, focused on the analysis at their desk without having to go into the field, maybe it allows them to extend their working years while we, continue to solve to bring more people into the profession.
How do you see that happening? I agree with you. Having grown up in Minnesota, I can't even imagine doing an appraisal when it's 20 below out there. I mean, it's miserable. But I've heard drones being used. I've heard all kinds of alternatives to the process of getting evaluation without giving up the appraisal. What are some of the things that are kind of getting you excited that you're hearing about?
So, what really gets me excited is really around digitization of a home, of a property. And capturing much more rich data sets using, technologies that exist nowadays, right? Computer vision is a very powerful technology, and it can glean a lot of information from photographs. And so there's some really cool tech that's being deployed in the market now that is enabling us to, one, really be able to give more transparency and a lot more visibility into a property without being there. And two, within that, we're expanding our data sets that we're able to capture about the home, understanding where things are spatially in or around that property. For instance, a view, now we would know, is that view visible from a corner bathroom or is that view visible from a great room with floor-to-ceiling windows and the back deck and the kitchen or master bedroom and things of that really apply to value. We can now capture that within the data set.
I want to go into the future of where appraisals are headed in just a minute, but I want to talk a little bit about GSE modernization and some of the initiatives that you're seeing coming out of the GSEs. Talk about that, especially as the chief innovation officer. Is this innovation or is this just a small step towards where we need to be?
I think it was the starting step, right? And some things that have been, the testimonies going on might not be as innovative. But I do believe that those initiatives are leading to innovation in our industry. That's a big area that we were focused on, and we could talk a little bit more as we move into that topic. But the GSEs is the FHFA put a couple of directives out, what they call scorecards in 2018 to both Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. One was a joint initiative to work on the UAD data set and the forms redesign. So they said, hey, guys, our forms are old. The data set's kind of archaic. Let's look at that and find out what we need to do to help advance our profession into the future. And second, each of you individually, we want you to go work on modernizing the appraisal process, the valuation process. And so both of them are working independently and on trying to find ways to really modernize the appraisal profession. And, you know, I mentioned earlier when you asked how I started, you know, I started gluing photographs and scratching comp and subject arrows on paper appraisals. And I really think the last major change in our industry was the digital camera and email, right? When all of a sudden we could start sending, you know, copies of appraisals through email versus, you know, having to use couriers and all the costs of paper and courier services to deliver appraisals to clients. So within that, the real main thing that's kind of transpired is this concept of bifurcation, right? Everybody talks about the bifurcated process. And what does that mean? It's really about splitting the inspection of the property aspect of the overall process of an appraisal from the analysis and reporting. And whether you split that between two appraisers or there are some tests that are going on in the marketplace, testing other labor forces like insurance inspectors or real estate agents to perform the inspection part of the process and then have an appraiser at their desktop that receives all that data and information to generate a value conclusion. And the concept is that, you know, one, we might not always need a desktop appraisal, right? The agencies have appraisal waiver programs, both Freddie and Fannie, and some of adding the property inspection data is really allowing them to increase the population of waivers that they can provide. Because when they give appraisal waivers, you know, they did when they performed a study to understand where their models degrade because they depend on that information to run the models they use to generate waivers, the information that comes from the appraisals themselves. So if they decrease that work coming in, the models start to degrade. And so it was right around, I think, and don't quote me on this, I want to say it was somewhere between 13 and 15% of waivers is when they started to see model degradation. And by adding property data back into the mix, it helps those models from continuing to further degrade, and they can expand that waiver population, which, you know, that does provide. I know that scares appraisers. I think there's still plenty of appraisal work that will be out there to keep everyone, you know, busy over the time. But, you know, it does improve the consumer experience to some extent when it reduces the cost and it gives some level of certainty further up in the process, and they're not waiting anxiously to find out, you know, when's that appraisal coming in, when's the appraisal coming in, et cetera.
Yeah, well, and it really opens up to appraisal technology. And what are the types of things that you're seeing being piloted today? And where do you see the future of technology? I mean, we're looking at artificial intelligence. We're seeing about all the changes, and it's impacting so many areas. And appraisal industry has been a bit of a laggard, but as industry leaders, Class Valuations is definitely an industry leader, you have probably a unique perspective on where things are going.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there's a good handful of leaders in the marketplace today. You know, we've got some really great competitors out there that are working tirelessly to also, you know, help drive our profession forward and, you know, bring more credibility. I think the really important part is we talk about it a lot, like, you know, thoughtful change and, you know, be responsible. As we start to test these new ways and these new concepts, ensuring that why we are able to decrease cycle times and potentially cost, I think cycle time is probably more of the important focus, that we don't degrade, to use that word again, the output or the outcome of the appraisal process. So we need to bring technologies in that allow us to, you know, reduce those cycle times and shorten that long pole in the tent to accommodate the instant gratification that you know, our society looks for today, while at the same time improving, not degrading, but improving the outcome of the result of the valuation. And so I think we can't do that without technology. Some of the tests that have been done up to date have tried using mobile apps and different things, but they really haven't been all that innovative. But now you mentioned drones. I mean, that's, you know, possibility. I've not really been a huge believer in using drones on a broad scale in appraisal valuation. For one, you have to find a drone pilot. Is that harder than finding an appraiser? Certain days they may not be able to be flown. How do they fly inside the home? Those kind of questions that come up. But it is cool, and everybody gets excited when they hear the word drone. But I really think what's going to transform our space is what we touched on briefly earlier, and that's computer vision and utilizing 3D scanning to generate floor plans that are extremely detailed, virtual tours that the desktop appraiser can use to walk through that property as if they were there. They have certain questions, they can zoom in, very high quality photography that at the same time leverages computer vision to, you know, increase the consistency and reliability of the measurements of the home and capture a lot more information at the same time that we've never been able to capture up to this point.
Talk about exactly what Class Valuation is doing that you're excited about, some of the things that are a unique value proposition for yourselves.
Sure. So we're really all in on 3D scanning and mobile solutions. So what we believe that in order to decrease cycle times, you need to be able to capture that property information right when you're done with the inspection itself. We, you know, today we typically see 2 to 3 days between inspection and delivery and a timeline. So if you can reduce that to instantaneous, you know, that obviously takes out a huge component of cycle time. And we believe in developing mobile solutions that will make appraisers or, you know, potentially alternate labor forces, although, you know, Class is definitely focused on the appraiser populace right now to drive the bifurcated model, to make them more efficient so that while they're at the property, they can collect information quickly, accurately, and submit it instantaneously when they're done. And we do that using mobile technologies and alongside of computer vision and 3D scanning.
You talk about the 3D scanning. That is interesting.
It really is. It's cool stuff. I mean, that's what it's probably the most excited I've been in my profession overall in terms of what we're working on right now and where we're kind of heading, you know, from a industry perspective around property data collection. So, you know, everyone's probably familiar with a virtual tour, right? You've been on the MLS or looking, you know, searching around on realtor.com or one of the listing platforms, and you can click in and you've got photos, but you can click on the virtual tour and you can kind of walk through the home virtually. So those are generated using cameras that basically you set up in you know, 1 to 2, what we call scans or spins in each room, where the camera takes a 360-degree photo from that spot. And as you move through the house, taking scans from each location, from each room, the computer vision can stitch all of those together to create that virtual tour. But what else it can do is with all of the machine learning and advancement in photo recognition and tools in that space, they can also extract measurements. They can capture information like floor material. We have an asset capture function, so you can get the year, make, model of all the major appliances in the home. You can smart tag. So if you're in a living room, for instance, and actually because of the HDR technologies now that they can deploy, is it takes 3 different apertures. So each spin does the 360, but within that, there's 3 different apertures taken for different light levels. And so it's really the technology that is able to get the best photo quality by merging those different apertures together, as I understand it. And I'm not the engineer behind it. That's the real secret sauce what these guys are doing. But it's really how you can merge that to create the best photo quality. And so you can be in a dark room. We've got, you know, examples with no electricity on a cloudy day, and you're still able to get high-level quality photos out of those properties.
Amazing.
It's continuing to advance. And what that really does, David, is now that downstream appraiser who's dependent on this information that's being provided to them, you know, up to this point, maybe they've had some photos and some data, and they're like, gosh, you know, I see something in this photo. You know, is that water that I'm seeing in that water damage in that back corner? But I can't zoom in, and the photo's kind of dark, and I'm concerned. So I feel like I need to go visit this property. Now we're giving them, or something that could be missed, even worse, right? Some major functional utility issue in the floor plan, like you have to walk through one bedroom to get into the other. The computer vision generates a very detailed floor plan, you know, measurements down to the room level, and it really gives that downstream appraiser the comfort they need to be able to say, yeah, I can do a credible valuation for my desktop using this information. And it also provides a lot more transparency for downstream participants and stakeholders in the mortgage process, with secondary markets, mortgage insurance companies, investors. Now they're getting a lot more information about the property than what they've been provided before with an appraisal and some photos in it.
Yeah, it's very exciting what you could do. What about things like, I started my career 46 years ago up in Seattle. I used to be an appraiser. They trained me as that, so I did that partly through the management training program as a part of it. And one of the things up there, they deal with dry rot. Are you able to, with the scanning, actually get in and start looking at structural potential problems there? To what degree is it currently, is the technology currently, and where do you see it going, Scott?
Where it can go is really unlimited, right? I mean, the technologies that are being used here are the same technologies that are being used to drive self-propelled vehicles, right? So we continue to advance so rapidly now in the technology sectors that, what's that old saying? Like the world is our oyster, right? It's going to continue to advance and go off in a lot of different directions. Today, I would say, you know, you're really restricted to, from a visual, you know, what you can identify visually is what you're going to be able to glean through the scan. So if it's something that is visually transparent, you're going to see it in the scan. You know, another example would be you can't hide. You know, we know if a room has been missed in the scan. We actually did a test where someone went out and they skipped a room. And when that came back in, the computer can point out that, hey, there's a missing room here. Somebody didn't scan one of the rooms in this home. And so it's fully transparent.
That's good.
It's extremely locked down so nobody can manipulate it. And so we have a raw data file of what that property looked like at time of origination.
You know, this is all really fun talking about what's possible with technology as you actually appraise a home. But let's talk about what the value is to lenders. Speed comes to mind. Obviously, we're going to get appraisals done at a faster rate, hopefully, and most likely at a lower cost.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I really think, as we talked earlier, what everybody's looking for is cycle time. And we used to always say, well, what's it matter if it takes a week or 10 days to get an appraisal done? And, you know, historically, when we're waiting on underwriters to gather all, you know, pay stubs and all this other information that they had to get, tax statements and, you know, bank statements, et cetera, it really didn't matter. But now that's all been digitized, right? That stuff all comes in instantaneously. And so we're left here with the appraisal turn time is becoming a challenge in the cycle time. And so we have to be able to drive cycle times down in our industry. And, you know, the idea is if we have appraisers, let's say we know ahead of time that desktop appraisal is going to be required, and we're gathering this information that can be uploaded to the cloud from the property through cellular technologies. Now there's another appraiser waiting for that information to come back in and able to do the desktop and the analysis and the report immediately after inspection within hours. Versus the way it would work today is, you know, most appraisers go out in the field and they inspect four or five properties and then they go back home and, you know, sit at their desk over the next 2 to 3 days. They type those appraisals and you know, you might be on the front side of that, you might be on the back side of that, right? And so it really helps to cut that cycle time down and deliver more instantaneous results. There's lots of other cool stuff and concepts that, you know, we can't talk about in great detail, but, you know, when and how we can capture this information up front so that we can have more instantaneous results in the process as well, or things that are being talked about and considered. And, you know, when you have the technology like the 3D scanning, it really opens the doors up for a lot more opportunity. And from a, you know, credit risk perspective, providing waivers on these properties, it also brings a lot more transparency to that process. And we can collect a lot more detailed data. Like, I mean, the volume of rooms, the quality of construction can really be quantified because of the information that's being captured through the digital scanning. And the condition of the property now is extremely transparent. You can't argue over it because it's right in front of you. And you have a virtual tour to look at to really display what the condition of these properties are.
So their lenders are going to have a better look at the property, and they're going to get it, the product, faster. And the cost, is that, do you really envisioning the cost going down, or is the cost of technology going to keep the cost of appraisals where it's at?
So, you know, that's a good question. I think long term, there is definitely a chance that we're going to see costs go down. I mean, well, and think about it this way. If you only need a property inspection and the desktop is not required, you're saving a lot of costs there, right? Because you're not having to do that whole second part of the process. The technology is not that expensive. I think it's about the individuals that we end up with in the field doing the work and what their cost models are. But yeah, I think long-term we are going to see a reduction in cost, and definitely in those outlying markets where
Right.
Costs on appraisals, quite frankly, have just gotten out of hand, right?
Yes.
Maybe not in your more MSA, major MSAs where appraisal cost is not really, you know, that out of hand currently as it stands today. I think it's more about driving quality and speed, the two key items.
Which really kind of goes to what's the future of certifications going to look like? I mean, we have all these requirements for the guys that used to go out, guys and gals that were certified. Is this technology going to make the certification process less onerous? Are there potentially more talent coming to the market as a result of this?
So, I think that's a good question. I definitely think that the technologies that are coming out will impact the skill level potentially that is necessary in the field. But at the same time, there's lots of discussion around what that looks like, right? We know these people are going into consumers' homes. That's a really important part of the process is public trust and safety and soundness, right? And so I think there's a lot of consideration. That's, again, what right now, class, we only work with appraisers in this process in our test and learn pilots. We're not testing any alternate labor forces. We believe in trying to make appraisers more efficient, and hopefully with that could also bring down cost if we can get them out doing more and making more money as well as being able to reduce costs for the consumer at the same time. And I think it will bring more people in. I think when you bring technology into an industry, that's when you start to attract younger talent to want to come and participate. I don't think it's been that attractive over the last few years. You know, who really wants to go out and drag a tape on the outside of a house using, you know, a clipboard and paper and pencil? Go back and type in essentially a word processor to generate a report. I think we need to make it more exciting. And I think that's the next step we'll see in the industry is we're going to start to see a lot of disruption in leveraging analytics and creating more credible results, you know, using data and analytics at the desktop for these appraisers as well.
We already touched on the future of the appraisal industry and the space, generally speaking. Big data. Data has just got to be so huge. You alluded to that earlier. Talk more about what do you think is the potential data could have, and then what are other some of the drivers that could have a big impact on the future?
As big data starts to make a play in the industry, which it already somewhat has through appraisal waivers and, you know, AVMs, which get utilized not so much directly in the origination space, but, you know, 10, 15 years ago, when people were really concerned about AVMs and using analytics in valuation, you know, we didn't have computers driving cars. And with the advancement of technologies, I do think that's going to continue to become more and more of an impact to our profession. I believe that the right way to go is to create kind of a dual approach where you're providing appraisers with this information to be able to sift through. I think it's important that a human with skill be able to engage in that process. And I think that's where the really good appraisers are going to end up in the future. They're going to become more of an analyst, leveraging a lot more data and information at their fingertips versus just pulling comps out of an MLS platform and making, you know, a paired sales analysis, you know, adjustments in an Excel spreadsheet. I think we're going to start to see computers and technology and data play a bigger role in the appraisal process. And I think the only way we keep the profession credible is by doing that. Otherwise, the industry will start to look for other alternatives. And I think the appraisers play an important role in the process. And I think if we continue to advance the tools that we provide them, you know, they'll continue to, you know, be a big part of the mortgage process.
Well, it's getting proper valuations done on a property is not going to change. It's the collateral that makes it's really the backbone that supports the whole rate structure where we're at is the collateral. And I think it's so important that we have these kind of discussions. I'm encouraged by what I hear you're developing, and I'm so grateful that you took the time to join us today, Scott. And I'm really excited to hear about more changes as they develop. I'd like to have you back and talk more as you see things developing. There's a lot of, at the rate of change, at the rate of development, we certainly can be doing another one of these very soon. I hope to have you back.
I would love that. Absolutely. And we're doing a lot more tests and learns out there right now. And I think you're absolutely right. Come the first of next year, I think there'll be a lot more to talk about.
Well, let's plan on having you back at the first part of next year or at the end of this year to talk about what we can anticipate in the new year. Very exciting. Thanks, Scott. Really appreciate it. We've had as our guest today Scott Rose, Chief Innovation Officer for Class Valuation. located in Troy, but he's located in beautiful Colorado along with Michael Detweiler and a lot of the team there. So a lot of innovation coming out of this company. Folks, pay attention to it. If you have not gotten a hold of a representative of Class Valuation, I encourage you to do so. Go to their website, classvaluation.com, and check it out. Thank you so much again, Scott, for being here with me today.
David, thanks for having me. It's an honor to be here. Appreciate it.
Good interview. I enjoyed that. Going back, you know, you record these, then you go back and listen to them, and you realize there's a lot of good content in there. So anyway, thanks. Really appreciate Scott joining us. Next week, we have Dr. Alan Bernard returning to the podcast. Dr. Bernard is one of the leading decision scientists and the theory of constraint experts, TOC, theory of constraint experts. We're going to be having him talk about things that he's looking at and also talk about an upcoming masterclass on the theory of constraints, how to manage in a world that is changing and how you can make good decisions. So you want to tune into next week's podcast. Again, his specialties is developing innovative decision support methods and applications to help individuals manage teams and do it better and faster and making decisions better and faster. By the way, his last interview, Paul just made me aware of, is April 29th. Be sure to check out that podcast, April 29th. That's it for this week. Be sure to check out previous podcasts on our website, Lincoln on Lending, as well as you can go download any one of the segments that we have and listen to it by itself or that on to colleagues if you find it interesting. We like your feedback. Please contact us with information about what you like, things about the podcast, things you think we could do better. Special thank you to our sponsors, Black Knight, Open Mortgage, Finastra, Resex Warehouse Lending, a division of United Bank, the MBA, Lenders One, the Mortgage Collaborative, the CMLA, Community Mortgage Lenders of America, Velma, as well as Knowledge Coop, Vidyard, and AI Assist. Thanks for listening. If you're interested in becoming a podcast sponsor, get a hold of us. Appreciate you. Have a great week. Look forward to having you back here next week when we have Dr. Alan Bernard as our guest.
You've been listening to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Transformational Mortgage Solutions. Join us next week, and thanks for listening.